All right. Just a reminder, these are, an electronic copy. I didn't check Blackboard to see who had the electronic copies, at this point, but rather than make you rush and get it done before class, you have until midnight tonight, technically 11:55, to make sure that you submit an electronic copy. If I don't get an electronic copy, you don't get a grade. So it's that simple, because it's like not turning in the assignment, right? And some people are tough, aren't they, Tim? For lack of a staple, they refused to accept the paper, so. Okay. We are continuing on in Romans. A little bit behind, but just stay with me. I'll get caught up eventually. Just such a fun class. I like to have nice little discussions with and learn people's names and all sorts of good things. So we have in chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, which is the correct way to write a reference. Love it when they clean the chalk trays. You lose all your chalk. 1, semicolon, 16, and 17, not chapter-1-verses-16-17, so we get an extra word in there, 17. References are abbreviated for a particular reason, because they are references. Now, if you're talking about the 99 bottles of beer on the wall, the song that you used to sing when you were bored and had lots of time to go, then you would write out N-I-N-E-T-Y-N-I-N-E as 99 reference to a number, and you're talking about it. But a reference should be simply short and sweet. So we have the thesis statement. Paul says something like, I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for salvation. He continues on, to everyone who has faith, the Jew also and the Greek, in it, the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed, thus the revelatory nature of the gospel. It is revealed. The good news is about making known something, and so the thesis of Romans is relatively positive. It's about the righteousness of God. Because he is using a rhetorical form or style common in the ancient world around the year 58 when the letter was written, he then follows that with an antithesis. What is that rhetorical style? Diatribe. It's called diatribe. It is a style that will show and play itself out as we study Paul's argument. Purpose of this perspectives in Romans class is not to discuss the reception history of Romans, how it's been interpreted by Augustine and Calvin and Aquinas and others, which would probably bore you and me to death. Not to lead short devotions in the book, of which some of you would have no interest whatsoever, but to explore the argument. What is Paul trying to say, and how does he actually say that so we understand what he is trying to communicate in this letter, sometimes called magisterial letter? People have made all sorts of adjectives about Romans. Magisterial, very lordly, high letter, because then theology becomes theoretical and not practical. Paul does not write this letter to propose some new theological perspective. He writes the letter because he's going to go to Rome, and he wants the people in Rome to know he's going to come to Rome. But he can't come now. It's very practical. So we have the antithesis that says the wrath of God is revealed, which leads us to a minor problem. What in the world is wrath?
Indignation.
For you see, just as we've discussed how important it is to do exegesis, it appears that almost every word we encounter, we do hermeneutics. Some of you may have had the privilege to grow up in a home where you lived, as the expression says, on pins and needles. You didn't know when you were going to do something that would ignite an emotional response in someone larger than you. And then, to use the expression common in our world, all hell would break loose. You didn't know when you were going to walk through a room and have to duck because something was being hurled across the room. Many of us view wrath within those terms. We have a hermeneutic. What does the word mean today? And that fills us as we read through. And when we read about the wrath of God, then we fill that word with the images we are familiar with of what wrath is. The problem is, these are not biblical images. Rather, they come from a Greco-Roman perspective. Hot chocolate really isn't very good when it gets cold, so I have to get it finished off fairly early. What was the Greco-Roman perspective? Well, the gods were just sitting up in the clouds on Mount Olympus waiting for a human to do something they didn't like, and then they would react. Zeus is pictured in most statues holding a lightning bolt. He would walk across Mount Olympus, stub his toe, get angry, and hurl a lightning bolt of destruction at some poor, unsuspecting person who had actually nothing to do with the problem. And those images of wrath fill our mind. What is wrath? Because, I mean, the antithesis says the wrath of God is revealed. So there must be something that we're going to find out about the wrath of God, because it has been revealed. But that's not the thesis of Romans. The thesis of Romans is about the righteousness of God being revealed, not the wrath. So, if we understand the rhetorical method called diatribe, then we understand that this section, 118 and following, is not the reason Paul wrote Romans. Unfortunately, most people who read Romans don't know anything about diatribe, and they think Paul makes a nice little statement: I'm unashamed of the gospel, and God's mad at everybody in the world, and therefore he wants to punish everybody, and it becomes a very bleak outlook. And they misunderstand Romans, and they continue to carry on misunderstandings because it's simply hearsay. To which I give you an example you will be familiar with. Who wrote the letter?
Paul
wrote the letter. Right? Paul of Tarsus. I thought he was Saul of Tarsus. Why does Paul have two names? Perhaps you have heard this. Saul is his pre-Christian name. Paul is his name after he becomes a Christian. How many have heard something sort of like that? It's bogus. Totally unbiblical. He lived in two cultures. How do you know it's not true? Read the book of Acts. In chapter 9, Paul is converted, but he's called Saul in chapter 9. And in chapter 13, he goes on his first missionary journey. And who is he called in chapter 13? Saul. So when he's with his Jewish buddies, he's Saul. When he's out in the Greco-Roman world, he is Paul. But why have so many of you heard this? Because it's hearsay based on somebody said it and people have repeated it because they never took time to verify it. diatribe, an ancient rhetorical method used by Hellenistic writers, people after Plato, to make an argument. Linear arguments are a modern conception, and if we take a linear argument and lay it on Romans, we're going to misunderstand what Romans Paul's trying to do. Because not only does he not write linear, okay, he writes kind of like this. He'll say something, and then he'll come back and say it again, and he'll move forward, and he'll jump back, and then he'll go, and it'll go back to something in the beginning. There's no linearity to it. Diatribe. Wrath. Why would I think that people misunderstand wrath? Because I go to the most educated part of the paper first, and I read the funnies. And only a few days ago, God, Zeus, has a lightning bolt. He just saw the latest report on his 401k. Something happened. He's upset. He's going to punish people. The wrath of God. A little bit distant. Haven't had one of these for a while. Hurricane Katrina. Anybody remember Hurricane Katrina? Did you hear anybody say it was the wrath of God on New Orleans? God's punishing New Orleans. They don't say anything about Mississippi that also got punished. All right, AIDS started about 1984, became a very big thing. Most of you won't remember 1984. Okay, AIDS has always been with your generation. Acquired immune deficiency syndrome. Showed up in the homosexual population. Do you suppose anyone said that AIDS was God's wrath on homosexuals? Oh, yes. And throughout this culture, people take almost any opportunity where somebody that they don't like is being punished and say, well, that's God's wrath. God got angry. He's punishing them. And they then say, well, go to Romans. It says it right there. Because they never read Romans in its good way. So, the gospel talks about truth. We're in the antithesis, right? So if we take something in the antithesis, we can almost understand its opposite because it's the antithesis, right? Wrath of God is revealed against all ungodliness and wickedness of those who by the wickedness suppress the truth. So what's the first thing that he says? The wicked people do what? They suppress the truth. So what's the gospel about? The truth. The righteousness of God is about truth. Oh, we could have 4 days of philosophical discussion on what truth means. We're not going to worry about that. But the worldview suppresses truth. They don't want you to know. Truth. And so the wrath of God is revealed. How? Well, people try and suppress the truth. Do people try and suppress the truth from you? Well, right there is illustration that what Paul says is true. Because people are trying to suppress the truth, the wrath of God is being revealed against those people. But how? That's a good question. Well, let's see what else he says. For what can be known about God is plain. God has shown it to them since the creation of the world, etc., etc., etc. They're without excuse. Though they knew God, they did not honor him as God. Right? They became futile, and their minds were darkened. Right? The good news sets people free. The wrath of God is slavery. So he's going to talk about freedom and slavery, truth and suppression of the truth. So, the good old wrath of God. Once again, just kind of introducing this concept a little slowly. We have 2 Greek words without a preposition between them. We have to supply one. wrath God. Is God the object of the wrath? Wrath to God? No, he's not the object. That doesn't make any sense. He is the subject of the wrath, right? The object is where it's pointed to. The subject is the one who permits it. So we have another little example, the wrath of God. But see, wrath is not random. It's not inconsistent. That's our viewpoint on wrath, right? What I just kind of said. I got a little ahead of myself in the lecture. I apologize. Sometimes I do that. Sometimes I get behind. Sometimes I get ahead. But what is wrath? It is the retribution that comes because humans turn from God. Though they knew God, they did not honor him. They became futile in their thinking. Their senseless minds were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged the glory of God for images. They turned away from God. The wrath of God is perhaps best understood, as we will see, in that God ceases to protect. We introduced a concept a little early about the Old Testament and covenant. Covenant is very important language in the Old Testament. The people of Israel were under covenant with God. God's responsibility was to protect them from their enemies. But what happens if they didn't keep the rules? He didn't protect them. Okay? Illustration. You'll get to use this one time. Maybe. Perhaps you've already seen it used. Right back there is an electrical socket. Children tend to be curious. What would happen if I took a paper clip and stuck it in those holes? That could be exciting. And so, as a parent of a curious child, you tell them, don't do that. Don't do that. Stop, stop, stop. And then they came out with these little plastic inserts because they didn't want to take a chance on it happening. I mean, a good slap on the hand usually does pretty good. However, even better, let them do it. You know, they will learn. And so you have a child who insists on putting something in the electrical socket. And lo and behold, they get this really funny feeling blowing through their body. Is that the wrath of God? Actually, it's the wrath of the parent. See, the parent has done everything they can within their power to protect the child from the unintended consequences of a bad action. And yet, the child continues to do it. What can the parent do? They can't protect them anymore. Illustration. One more illustration than a question. Well, let's go with the question first. Yep, that's coming up real quick. He handed them over. Right? Wrath. Okay? The retribution that comes because humans turn from God. Did Katrina happen because humans turned from God? Long time ago. Well, yeah, we could go into creation theology in that regard, but it simply happened because hurricanes happen. Is Greensburg the wrath of God? Do they have gambling and prostitution, all those things? No, that was just a tragedy. Now, Katrina, that was the wrath of God, but Greensburg was just a tragedy. Right? Amazing. Same results, but we give different rationale for them. Why? Because we as a public misunderstand the concept wrath of God. But what Paul is saying in the good news, the righteousness of God is revealed, and when the righteousness of God is revealed, then all of a sudden the wrath of God is revealed because you don't see righteousness. Anybody go to Brahms for a milkshake? Pretty good, aren't they? Yeah. Anybody go to Arby's for a milkshake? When you want a milkshake, you go to Arby's? or McDonald's? How's the McDonald's milkshake compared to Brahms milkshake? There's no comparison, is there? Right? You only know the bad part when you know the good part. Now, if you've never had anything except a McDonald's milkshake, you'll think they're pretty good, especially on a hot day in the summer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then you go to Brahms, and you go, oh, whoa, this is pretty good. See, the righteousness of God is revealed, and doing so reveals the wrath of God. They're like flip sides of a coin. So, Paul's argument. Now, here's where we have problems. We don't always agree with Paul. Hermeneutically, if we were talking about today, we could go out into downtown Wichita and ask people, do you believe God exists? And according to the Gallup poll, we get about 98% of people say, yeah, God exists. And then they would go on to talk about some God that lived within them or lived in the plants or lived in the trees or lived in dogs and cats. And all you'd find out that it's really quite strange, their view of God. But yes, God exists. But you'd still have about 2% of the people who would say, nope, there is no God. Go back to 58 AD. You go down to the streets of Athens, does God exist? Yeah, not only God exists, the gods exist. The ancient world was religious by nature. Everyone believed that gods existed. The second thing of that, whoops, let's go back, is that we exist now. Go down to downtown Wichita in 2009. Where did humans come from? Oh. That would raise some issues, wouldn't it? Were they created by God? Oh, no. Came out of the ocean and, you know, billions of years and millions of years, evolution, and you got this and that and the other. And see, the thing with Paul, though, and in the first century, humanity existed because the gods made them exist. So while I can talk to you about Paul's view in 58, it may not be the view of people in 2009. So, does that make Paul wrong? That becomes the issue. Well, no. It doesn't make Paul wrong. This is Paul's view in the year 58. You may agree with his view, you may disagree with his view, but of course in the modern world, in postmodern world, nobody is wrong. Everybody's right, as long as they agree with me. Kind of has its limitations, right? Everybody's right, but then you call them wrong because they don't agree with you. Kind of the failing of the postmodern interpretation. I'm sorry, probably giving you way more than you want in this class today about perspectives, the way we think. But that's true. So, what happened? Well, in the ancient world, humans exist because God created us, and yet we don't acknowledge God. We fail to acknowledge God and His authority. They turn their backs on God. And then, because he is using a formula, rhetorical strategy called diatribe. Has anyone figured out if diatribe is going to be on the test yet or not? Most of you are concerned about your grade in this class, especially after the papers. You're wondering, how tough is he going to be? Okay. Diatribe. Thesis, antithesis, example of the antithesis. And he gives us an example. So, they exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling a mortal human being or birds or four-footed animals. So, the example that Paul gives is called idolatry. Paul says, God exists. In fact, Paul says, Yahweh exists. One God. The Romans said, gods exist. There's a whole bunch of them. And yeah. Paul says, no, one God exists. He is responsible for creation. And people turned their back on that one God. And they created idols. We know about idols. Old movie, by your standards, Gladiator. Anyone seen Gladiator? It was a biggie about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. There's this little sack that keeps showing up. He uses it at the beginning of the movie. He gets it back at the end of the movie, and it gets buried in the floor of the what? Roman Colosseum. Anybody say the Roman Colosseum? Talk about it? Yeah. It was actually there. Was it there in 58 when Paul was around? No. So don't talk about how Paul loved the Roman Colosseum. Wasn't built yet. Little thing about chronology. Paul never saw the Colosseum. He did not die in the Colosseum. If you go to Rome, here's where Paul died, in the Colosseum. It's a bunch of tourists. Something. You fill in the word. Because the Colosseum wasn't built till after the emperor Vespasian and Titus, his son, after the year 70. Paul was dead before that. Kind of interesting how tourists can get away with things. But what was in that little sack? Does anybody remember? Tim, you seem to be nodding. Little wooden figures. They were his household gods. Nope. Those are his household gods. His household gods. What's the number one archaeological find besides pottery? Little figurines of household gods. We all know about the big statues. But they also had little household deities. Idolatry, in Paul's view, was rampant in the ancient world because everybody had representations of their gods. Right? See, if you know something about culture, then you know those are his household gods. They're responsible for protecting his house. But they didn't, did they? Right? So what does Paul actually say? Well, idolatry is actually disobedience to God. You fail to acknowledge that God exists, and so you turn your back and say, well, this is the God that's responsible for my creation. This little piece of wood is responsible for me. So, how do I know the wrath of God exists? Well, because people practice idolatry. Now, if people don't practice idolatry, then I have no example of the wrath of God existing. But the wrath of God exists because people have abandoned God, and so they're no longer under his protection. How do I know that they've abandoned God? Because they worship idols. Is this straight line thinking? No, it's kind of circular thinking that he's engaged in. So, what happens when people worship idols? And here's where Danielle started to pick up a phrase that hopefully some of you recognize, at least in this section. Therefore, God gave them up. Again in 26, God gave them up. And again in 28, God gave them up. So what's the wrath of God? It's basically just giving them up. The wrath of parents is not beating the child senseless. We call that child abuse today. The wrath of parents is stopping to protect the child. It's when you actually say, phew, here's a paperclip, go to it. I'm no longer going to slap your hand every time you go that way. I'm no longer going to spank your bottom every time you go that way. I'm just going to, you want to do it? Go ahead. Go do it. Then what happens? Right? Wrath of God is handing over. Consequences happen in lots of situations. Parents tell you, it's illegal to drink alcohol in this state until you're 21 years age. You shouldn't do it. Hopefully they tell you that. Not that I know of. Used to be 18 when I was in college, so I don't keep up on that. So, student life rules. Not supposed to drink alcohol here on campus. Why? One, it's illegal! Now, do you go ahead and drink alcohol before you're 21? I don't know. Parent says don't. And then all of a sudden you're in jail. What's the parent do? They come and bail you out? They might. And that would be the love and righteousness of the parent. What if they just say, hey, I've told you for your life not to do that. You went ahead and did it. Suffer the consequences. Is that wrath? We'd say, how could you do that? That's just so unkind. Really? I've told you for time after time after time after time after time, don't do that. You do it anyway. You get what you wanted. And a lot more than you thought you wanted. Because you know, when people go looking for jobs after college, they run criminal background checks. And it has an impact on whether you get a job or not. Unintended consequences. The wrath of God is simply saying, okay, you ignore me, go get whatever you deserve. Handing over. It's not God reaching out and wiping out a city because he doesn't like what's going on in New Orleans. I mean, who could not like jazz? Even God likes jazz. The birthplace of jazz. And Creole and jambalaya. Right? All the good stuff. Crawfish balls. You know? All that good stuff. How could he not? Well, no. He just, that's not what wrath of God is. It's simply, okay, go ahead and do it. So, the consequence is God hands them over to impurity. So we have the thesis, we have the antithesis, we have the example. The example that the wrath of God exists is idolatry. Okay? So what's the consequence of idolatry? Well, he gave them up to impurity. We love to read this part. God hates homosexuals. I don't find the word there at all. Hate. He gave them up to the lust of their hearts, to the degrading of their bodies, so they exchanged the truth about God for a lie, and they worshiped the creature rather than the creator. Idolatry. Because of idolatry, God gave them up to degrading passions. Women exchanged intercourse and of course for unnatural men also, etc., 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 etc. The wrath of God is homosexuality. God hates homosexuals. Do you know there's churches that preach that? They say, well, right here it says God handed them over. They forget the concept of covenant and the fact that in Paul's thinking, God created us. We exist because of God, so we are supposed to worship God, we worship other things. If we choose to worship other things, God will just hand us over. Hands us over. Now, some people think we live in a pretty immoral society. They never were in ancient Rome. Because ancient Rome didn't have any kind of Christian or Judeo influence. If all you want to hear about is the bad stuff, there's plenty of ancient writers who talk about it. Go to the library, pick out some of them. If some of the people knew we had those stuff in the library, they'd probably have it banned. But it's in the ancient writers. Talks about all the bad things they did. Impurity is the consequence of idolatry. Idolatry is evidence that the wrath of God is present. Homosexuality is one example of impurity. Is that the only thing God hates? Well, that's the problem. They don't read Romans. Hopefully you read all the way chapter 1 through 3. Right? And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, here it is. Acknowledging God. That's the problem. Acknowledging God. How do I know people don't acknowledge God? They have idols. What happens when they have idols? Well, God hands them over to impurity. What's impurity, Josh? I want to know what impurity is. Well, here's one example. But then what does he say? God gave them up to a debased mind and things they should not be done. They are filled with wickedness and evil, covetousness, malice, envy, murder. Murder is just as bad as homosexuality. Strife, deceit, craftiness, gossips. Gossips and murder in the same breath. Huh. Just in case we don't know what impurity is, he gives us lots of examples. So, comes to homosexuality. It's a very big topic. Lots of people talk about it. We got a few things to say, right? Oh, and we got time to say it. God handed them over. God handed them over. God handed them over. Paul says it three times. He repeats himself, repeats himself, repeats himself, repeats himself. Is it important to repeat yourself? It either means you're losing your mind and you can't remember what you said, or it means you're trying to make a point. Now, Romans was written to be read to a group of people. Do you repeat yourself when you're giving an oral speech? Seems like they do that today. They did it then. He handed them over, handed them over, handed them over. In other words, hey, that's what you want? Go ahead. They got what they deserve for their actions without any intervention by God. News article today. Some of you may have seen it. First couple to openly challenge the Gay Marriage Act. Guess what's happening? They're now getting divorced. See, the problem with marriage is divorce. The splitting up of it. You want to get married? Go ahead. And then what happens when it goes through court? Oh, pay the lawyers out there. Wahoo. To settle everything. And I'm sure it's not amicable. You want that? Go ahead. You want that? Go ahead. That's the wrath of God. He stops protecting you from the consequences of your actions. And you get what you want, which is not really a good thing. So, exegesis, lovely word. What did the text mean? Paul says it's wrong. Why does Paul say it's wrong? Why? Because homosexuality is an example of impurity. Impurity is the consequences of idolatry, and idolatry is wrong. Practicing idolatry results in all sorts of consequences. It's wrong because it's the effect of idolatry. He's not lambasting homosexuals here. He's lambasting idolatry. When was the last time you heard somebody talk about idolatry being wrong? That's what Paul's arguing against. So hermeneutically, what's it mean today? Good word, hermeneutics. What does the text mean today? Since most of you don't have Luke Timothy Johnson yet, you can't read him and find out what he has to say about that. He goes all the way up to the point of saying, oh, it's wrong, and then he stops short. Why would he stop short? Exactly. You don't want to be labeled as somebody who says homosexuality is wrong. Just think how many people would be protesting outside your door, right? With you in just one moment. So there's a lot of views today, right? We try and explain it in all sorts of fashions. We used to try and explain it psychologically. Now we're trying to find some genetic gene that causes it. We're always trying to explain it. We spend a lot of money trying to explain it. Is there a gene for murder also? Is there a gene for gossiping? Is there a gene for wickedness, evil, covetousness, malice? Any of those? It's really quite strange. So there's a lot of views today. So Luke Timothy Johnson doesn't really answer the question. I think if you read to his conclusion, he says, yeah, it's wrong, but he won't say that because he's writing a book. Plus, I think if he said that at the school he works at, he'd probably get fired. So I would simply say, if you buy into Paul's argument that we exist because God exists, and say that homosexuality is an example of a life that doesn't acknowledge God, then if you buy into his argument, you will jump to the conclusion that yes, it is an example of a life that doesn't acknowledge God today. However, because we're dealing with an argument, if you do not buy into the presupposition God exists and we exist because God exists, and how many people in our world don't buy into that? How many people in our world think that we just kind of evolved and came to be animals because of some? Have you read the explanations about different animals who practice homosexuality in the wild? And, you know, maybe it's an earthworm that's actually asexual and just changes from time to time. Have you heard all those arguments? Why? Because humans exist from evolution. And if humans exist from evolution, then the practices of humanity can be explained in that fashion. And if that is the starting point of your or somebody else's argument, you're not going to reach the conclusion that homosexuality is an example of a life that doesn't acknowledge God, because you start in the wrong place. When you deal with an argument, are we dealing with an argument this semester? This is much a course on how do you make an argument, it is Romans. You have a presupposition. Okay? Can make presuppositions. Wearing a hat in class is a sign of disrespect. That's my presupposition. And so I can make an argument from that point that anyone who wears a hat in class will get a 10-point deduction every day they wear a hat. That's my presupposition. That's my argument. I don't care if you agree with it or not. Because you're not going to say wearing a hat is wrong, you're going to say, well, I think wearing a hat in class is a sign of good taste and of style. Well, if we're to be stylish when we come to class, then how many of us fail in being stylish in our apparel when we come to class? Right? Arguments are about presuppositions and leading it to a point. So, then we get to talk about sex. Lovely topic. Human sexuality. That's what it's talking about. There are four basic positions. One, sex is vile. You should abstain from it at all costs because it's really, really bad. If we all believe that, that'd be the end of the species. Right? Are there people who say that? Yeah. Sex is necessary. We got to have babies, but don't enjoy it if you have to engage in sex. Don't want to do that. Are there people who take that position? Certainly. Sex is the ultimate for life. Engage in sex whenever, wherever, with whomever you want. That's the whole reason we exist, is to have sex. Sexual intercourse. Who knows what the consequences will be? Are there people who take that position? Yes. Are there lots of different starting places? Yeah. And there will be all sorts of people who say Paul hated sex. We should all be like Paul and hate sex because they don't understand his argument and they take his message out of context. But if you read Paul, and I think this would be Paul's position, sex is God's gift. It's a gift, right? Use it joyously, responsibly, as a gift is intended within a heterosexual marriage. Okay? So, a gift. Somebody gives you a 12-gauge shotgun. It's a gift. Are you supposed to use it in the house? Are you supposed to use it in a crowd? Are you supposed to use it, take it to campus and show everybody? Well, no. Gifts are given for a specific purpose. to be used in an appropriate way. That's all Paul's saying. But what he's really saying is that the righteousness of God is revealed. That's what I want to talk about. The righteousness of God is revealed. But that means the wrath of God is revealed. That's the opposite. How do I know the wrath of God is being revealed? Because idolatry exists. Well, how do I know idolatry exists? Well, without looking around, I simply see impurity. The fact that there is impurity means that idolatry exists. It means God has handed people over to just simply receive some consequences of their actions. So, what is impurity? Well, here's one example, but then he repeats himself, and so he continues on with where we were. God, haters, insolent, haughty, boastful, just as bad as being murderer, boastful. Inventors of evil, rebellious towards parents, foolish. Rebellious towards parents is impurity. Are people preaching on that one? That and murder go hand in hand? Foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. The ancient world was filled with vices and virtues. Vices are the bad stuff with a C, not an S. An S is what you put your finger in and start turning the deal until it hurts, right? A vice, it's a clamping device. That's on the test too. A clamping device, V-I-S-E. You guys don't even know what a vice is? Vice grips, yes! They don't make you take shop anymore, huh? It's always fun to see how far you could turn the thing, see what kind of pain you could resist. Ah, education has changed. It's now about learning things, I guess. Virtues are the good things. Philosophically, lots of people had vice lists. Okay? A friend of mine, I like Philo. He's from Alexandria. Okay? Get ready, because this is not on your notes. You'll want to write this down. Know then, my good friend, that if you become a votary of pleasure, a votary candle of pleasure, you will be all these things. Now he's going to list these things. Bold, cunning, audacious, unsociable. Are those there? Uncourteous, inhuman, lawless, savage, ill-tempered, unrestrainable, worthless man. Start writing. This is one of the longest vice lists I've ever found. People in the ancient world loved to come up with things that were wrong. And Philo says, all these things are wrong. You're full of evil acts. You have no participation with others. You're slanderous, disorderly, cheating. The honor code. Chatterer, gossip, blabber, flatterer, spendthrift, yielding to impulses, gluttony, the seven cardinal sins, used to be important in the medieval ages.
Stupid.
Ah, yes. Okay? So, what Paul is saying in chapter 1, and it will continue on, okay? The wrath of God exists because God is revealing His righteousness. That means His wrath is also being revealed. He's not writing to say how bad and mean God is. But the flip side of good things are bad things. I could do this because I'm going to get two boxes of Thin Mints pretty soon, and I can bring those to class, and I can bestow my righteousness on this group because they're not going to wear hats that day. Right? And everybody gets a Thin Mint cookie. Unless, of course, you're sitting on that side of the room. Now, which are you going to focus on? The goodness of Stan or the meanness of Stan?
Depends on which side you're on.
Right? Wrath of God is being revealed. How do I know? Because people practice idolatry. What's the result of idolatry? It is impurity. Well, Paul, I'm kind of stupid. Would you please tell me what impurity is? Oh, you want to know what impurity is? Sure, I got some examples. Let me just give you a few. Right? That's Romans chapter 1. Now we get to start with Romans chapter 2. Went Friday. Okay? Danielle, did you have a question I missed?
I wrote them down.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Have a good afternoon.